Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:18 p.m. that is Central Time. Today is July 5th. Well, a lot happened today, particularly when markets were pretty quiet yesterday during the 4th of July holiday. The dollar broke higher on the dollar index measure. So this is mostly euro, and it's really more about euro and pound weakness than most other currencies. Now, when we look at this though on the Bloomberg Dollar Index, then it's less euro weighted, so it hasn't broken out to new all-time highs, but we're certainly climbing towards the peak back in 2020. So obviously the epicenter of risk right now is in Europe, and this is multifaceted. So Russia has correctly identified that there's a soft underbelly in Europe in the fact that they are energy importers. So this is obviously been a long-term strategy to increase European dependency on Russian exports, and now they are pulling the lever on that tool. So the invasion of Ukraine, where they have pretty much successfully created a land corridor to Crimea and then created something of a buffer state between themselves and Ukraine, has achieved some of their military objectives, and they may yet get more ambitious just by, instead of a blitzkrieg type of advance, become simply just a grinding advance. But there's no sign that this war is over. And of course, it is putting huge pressure on Europe. So, on the first point, natural gas prices have been just surging higher. So, when we look at these front month contracts in the Netherlands, even though the price was not up in a dynamic manner in here today, it was still up. And that is despite the fact that oil prices were down in an exceptionally dynamic manner. So Brent crude came back by $10 to test the $100 level. And then we can think about West Texas Intermediate, where the price also has come back in a dynamic manner. So there's obviously this clear argument. Oil prices haven't really been surging higher for the last few months. Now, they did surge higher at the beginning of this year, and we got up to test the all-time peak. Now it's fully unwound the overextension relative to the 200-day moving average, and we had a big downside Q reversal 4 weeks ago. There's this argument in the market about whether the outsized problem with regard to increasing supply against a background where Russian supply is falling and nobody within the NATO umbrella wants to buy it. And then the alternative is that demand is falling because of the knock-on effect. So the fact that European natural gas prices are still moving higher despite the fact that oil prices are falling. Well, it helps to further emphasize the fact that this is a natural gas problem and that there is still a lot of oil out there that Russia does not control, but that the global market for sea transported natural gas is still reasonably undeveloped. So the first point is that we're going to see more development of LNG export facilities. And what I found interesting as well is that the Freeport export facility in the USA that had the explosion at the beginning of June, they've basically been told they're not allowed to repair it, much less put it back into production until public safety concerns have been addressed. Well, nobody was injured in the explosion. So this question about public safety is a bit of a misnomer, but it's probably more to do with the fact that energy prices in the USA are now a serious political issue. And there is a midterm election coming up in November. So US natural gas prices have been coming down all month and have come down from 950 to 550. So not quite a 50% decline, but really not all that far away from it either. And this is very much welcomed in terms of trying to get control of inflationary pressures. So the USA is exporting natural gas. They, for the first time ever, the amount of natural gas exported in June was higher than was imported into Europe by Russia. So that's a lot of gas that's leaving the USA, even though this export facility has been shut down. And that's obviously helping the US economy on the one hand. When we think about what the USA's commitments are under NATO, well, it's to provide military support. And they're providing military support to Ukraine, despite the fact that they're not in NATO. But then they're also going to be stationing more troops in the Baltic nations and in Poland. And they'll be moving more stealth fighters into the UK. So they're certainly beefing up the presence within NATO. But the other significant point is that there's an effort underway to try and support the European economy by exporting gas. But perhaps, and that's not being particularly talked about, but this effort to try and curtail the fixing of this export facility is also very much aimed at trying to support Europe without damaging the US economy. And then we can, of course, that's also helping to support the dollar. It's negative for just about all commodities. So copper prices were also down today in really quite a dynamic manner and dropping down through the 1,000-day moving average and extending this type 2 top formation. So this is a massive reaction against the prevailing uptrend with clear loss of momentum, failed upside breaks, resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average. Very oversold in the short term, coming back into the region of the peaks from back in 2017 and 18. So we may be at a position where some support might begin to be found. But the real challenge here is that global growth is slowing down. And when we look at the pullbacks we're seeing now in oil and in commodities generally, and in US natural gas, in European markets breaking downwards, this is a new reaction low for the Euro Stoxx index. There's the clear potential that German industry is going to come under severe pressure. And the DAX index is also now down at a new reaction low. So this is particularly difficult for companies that are heavily dependent on access to just supplies of natural gas. BASF, for example, is back in the region of the 2020 lows and still falling. And it is worth reminding ourselves that the 2020 low was not the terminal point, but rather just coming back into the lower or the region of the lows from 2010. There's obviously a real problem underway in Europe, and the industrial sector is going to come under exceptional pressure. So it also is going to weigh on the steel sector. And of course, steel is a massive energy consumer. So ArcelorMittal is also breaking downwards. But then you can also think about the beneficiaries. So Cleveland-Cliffs has also broken down in an exceptionally dynamic manner. But it's a 100% North American operation. They're mining and their furnaces are all in the USA. So they have a domestic source of iron ore. And there's going to be a lot of military material is provided. The primary thing that they produce right now is steel for cars. Well, retooling steel for cars and providing it to the defense industry is probably not that much of a difficult transition. Now, when we think about the defense sector, well, Europe is definitely going to have to invest in defense. So these types of companies are holding up better. And the iShares Aerospace and Defense ETF is still right in the region of the lower side of this range that's been forming for most of the last year. At least it is not breaking downwards. What I found especially interesting right now is that bond yields, having gone up almost universally everywhere, are now coming down in unison. So the 10-year yield was down another 5 basis points in here today, and this is looking increasingly like a failed upside break. Now, we've seen a sufficiently large move, and certainly inflationary pressures are not about to disappear. But the threat from global growth deteriorating is going to destroy some demand, and that's going to have a knock-on effect on inflationary pressures. So we should be prepared for a demand shock, and that's going to mitigate some of the inflationary pressures. So bond yields are starting to come back down, and that's a clear benefit for the more levered portion of the market. So the Nasdaq 100 was up over 1% in here today, and it looks like it's putting in a higher reaction low. We haven't seen a higher reaction low since at least November. So that's, I think, rather important. And when we look at this on a weekly basis, well, we've had a significant decline, and support is certainly being found in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. Now, on this occasion, the 200-day moving average is trending downwards. So we're short-term oversold. There's a higher reaction low. It is quite likely we're going to see a reversionary move. That's why I closed out the most expensive portion of my short position last week, which took my average shorting price back above the 200-day moving average. I'm willing to sit through a reversionary move because I think that there will be an additional shorting opportunity. And the reason for that is because we still have earnings estimates that are exceptionally bullish. And I think that that's rather interesting here, that when we think about some of these trends that have been evolving, that valuations have contracted because we've had a significant pullback on stock market. But earnings estimates are still exceptionally high. And they are anticipating that they're going to be trending higher for the next 3 years. So that's, I think, a rather significant point, that investors still think that earnings are going to continue higher if we are moving into a much slower growth environment globally, and with the clear potential that there will be a recession. But at present, at least, we have this environment where people are ignoring the fact that profit margins are deteriorating. Now, profit margins don't collapse unless there's a recession, but it is likely we're going to have a recession. And in that case, it would be reasonable to anticipate that both earnings and profit margins will deteriorate. So, to me at least, that suggests that any significant rally will be a shorting opportunity. The USA is benefiting from the lower energy price, lower commodity prices, stronger dollar, and the fact that a lot of unprofitable companies don't have sales to begin with. So if they don't have, if they don't, if they're more concerned with borrowing costs than sales, Well, then deteriorating sales don't matter, provided they have access to cheaper credit. So that's what we're seeing with bond yields contracting. It's creating demand for the more levered portion of the market. And a lot of these highly levered companies are exceptionally cheap right now. So there is the clear potential that we're going to see a reversionary rally in the most unprofitable portion of the market, which is doesn't make sense. So there's a clear contradiction there that in the threat and potential reality of a recession, the most unprofitable portion of the market can rally, but that's only because of access to credit and lower borrowing costs, and the fact that there's still a lot of money floating around, and that it's got to go somewhere. But with commodity prices pulling back, gold pulled back in an exceptionally violent manner in here today. And perhaps more important than that, it's closing on the low. So this has now broken the sequence of higher reaction lows. And I was willing to give it the benefit of the doubt last week when it dropped down and then rebounded. It failed to rebound in here today. Silver prices had rebounded last week, but then failed to hold that in here today and dropped further below the $20 level. So it's pushing back down into the base formation. So I closed out my gold leverage longs. I'm still holding my gold miners. And one of the challenges for gold miners is obviously that gold prices are going down, but also that we have high energy prices, which has impeded their profitability. Well, energy prices are starting to come back down too. It suggests, at least to me, that the bigger risk here is that there's contagion risk in the precious metals, and that we've seen plenty of examples of that in, excuse me, I apologize for my phone ringing. We've seen plenty of evidence of that in the gold market in the past. So gold pulled back really quite sharply in 2020. It pulled back sharply in 2016. Then it pulled back really sharply in 2008. So during periods of time where there is stress in the market, we're going to see gold also experience stress. It could easily come back into the region of the 1,000-day moving average. I've been sitting with my levered longs in gold for nearly 2 years, and there have been times when they've been in profit, and there's been times when they haven't been. And now we're seeing the primary consistency of the trend up over the last 18 months broken. So I'm no longer willing to hold them in the short term, but I do have bids under the market. I'll be willing to buy deep short-term oversold conditions, but we're just not there yet. And I'm not willing to continue to feed leveraged positions because they're eating into my profits from other positions. Still short, I've been taking profits out of the NASDAQ. I'm still short copper. And even though we have short-term oversold conditions in copper, it's still a declining market environment. And I think that this is more of a trader than an investor's market. So I'm really being forced by conditions to become more activist, because as consistency characteristics deteriorate, the risk of surprises on the downside are amplified. So we have to be at least prepared for those eventualities. And I think that the support that's coming through in the NASDAQ is unlikely to be sustained, and I'm going to be willing to short those rallies. And I'd rather free up available capital to increase positions where I think that there are near-term profit opportunities rather than hold money in reserve to feed positions that are not performing. So that's the primary rationale for my decision in here today. As we look forward, well, we know that there is evidence of buying opportunities and value starting to come back into the market. The immunotherapy sector is showing increasing evidence that it has bottomed. So, and then the contraction in borrowing costs is helping to support the wider innovation sector as well. So, in fact, the ARK Innovation ETF is probably a trading opportunity, but it's unlikely to be the new leader. And it's more likely, in fact, following a short-term rally to then morph into a type 3 bottoming characteristic, where we get lengthy ranging time and size. And it's certainly going to be a more challenging environment in future for the innovation sector because we're moving into a more uncertain global environment. And this increasing great power competition between the major powers, whether that is Europe and Russia, or the USA and Russia and China, this isn't about to go away anytime soon. ASML was down in a dynamic manner again in here today. As if the weaker European economy weren't enough, the US government is leaning on them to stop them from selling second generation, or I guess the not the latest generation, but the generation before the latest types of machines to China. And there is a strong likelihood that they're going to achieve that because the USA is providing a great deal of assistance to Europe and they're going to ask for favors in return. And this might be the favor that they're asking of the Dutch government. We can probably anticipate that they will be asking for favors from a large number of the European economies that they're providing assistance to, and particularly energy exports to. So that's not great news for ASML. It's also not great news for the relationship with China. And when we think about the CSI 300, it's been resurgent, or I guess at the very least, it has been steady. Now the renminbi is still deteriorating, and this is a state-sponsored bull market, so they're certainly encouraging investors to get back into the market, and China is providing liquidity to the economy, so that's generally positive for asset prices. And then we can think about Japan. The yen is still quite weak. The Nikkei was in positive territory in here today, and it's probably going to have difficulty sustaining that move in here tomorrow. But perhaps the more important point is that in nominal terms, the Nikkei really hasn't been going anywhere. Now, of course, if we were to redenominate it, then we're provided with a rather different story where it's been trending downwards in no uncertain terms. But from a domestic investor's perspective, it's been insulated by the weakness of the currency. So if we're looking at this significant deterioration in commodity prices, where we've seen these same sorts of moves on the downside right across agriculture and the industrial metals, then this is going to mitigate some of the inflationary pressures. And then people are going to start worrying more about growth than inflation. So we're more likely than not to be moving into a recessionary environment. The one thing that investors have been arguing was that the spread between the 10-year and the 3-month was still very high, but that is coming down in a hurry. And it has contracted by more than 100 basis points in the space of a month. and does look like it is going to contract further. The Federal Reserve wants to kill off inflation. And if they persist in raising interest rates, we are certainly going to have a recession. And therefore, it is likely that the surprises will be potentially first for some sectors on the upside, but for just about everything else on the downside. I think with that, I'll leave it for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.